Well, first, thank you for getting up so early in the morning. I have never given a talk on Sunday morning at 8 o'clock. And as I approach my 80th year, this is obviously a landmark for me. What I want to talk about is the work we've been doing for the last 5 or 6 years on the Halloween jeans. As you can see, this is an important set of genes because they are involved in the biosynthesis of the molting hormone of all arthropods, 20-hydroxyecdysone. And what I want to show you today is the advantage of working on a genetic organism like Drosophila. I don't remember, Vince, are you here? What, did he leave already?
No.
I forgot, when did you come to my lab?
I don't remember.
Anyway, it was probably about 20 years ago that I decided I wanted to know about genetics because I was interested in steroid hormone receptors, and we had gone as far as we could go with Manduca, and in fact the mammal people got as far as they could go without using genetics. And since that time, we have worked on both organisms, and I'm going to tell you a bit about both of them. Why use Drosophila? Drosophila is an insect, and as you can see from this, and I'm not going to go through it step by step, it has some fantastic advantages as an experimental organism. Now, for about 50 years, people have been trying to figure out the biosynthetic scheme for ecdysone, or 20-hydroxyecdysone. And they have failed because the intermediates are low and labile. So standard biochemical analyses just didn't work, and so we turned to genetics some years ago. And we had all of this information. And so what we looked for was a stage in which the animal could no longer live or molt. And it turns out it's the embryo, because there is embryonic molting. And you take these embryos and you measure and you find out they have very little ecdysteroids of any type. The so-called low ecdysteroid mutants. So we worked on these. And we decided that we were going to characterize the genes and the enzymes that were vital for ecdysteroidogenesis. Again, I'm not going to go through this step by step, but this was of great importance to us, and that was the Drosophila database and the cytogenetic maps that Vishaus and Nussbaum-Vilhard did in the 1980s. They won Nobel Prizes later, but that wasn't for that particular work. And you can see the various steps. And basically you wind up with a cDNA or a gene, and you transfect it into a Drosophila S2 cell line, and then the hard stuff occurs, and that is, what is the function? And what we had to do was sort of guess at the various intermediates, make these intermediates, label these intermediates, and then incubate those intermediates with the S2 cells containing the putative gene or enzyme. And we did all that stuff, and luckily, as I will tell you at the end, we worked with the Mike O'Connor lab at Minnesota, and he is a true Drosophila geneticist. So here are these polyteen chromosomes, and you can see some of them are very enlarged, and these are called puffs, or Balbiani rings. And 45 years ago, we knew very little about what those meant, but Howard Schneiderman and I, in a review article, postulated that maybe they are the sites of mRNA synthesis. And it turns out from years and years of study that that's true. And here, for example, is the incorporation of uridine into one of these puffs after exposure of these glands, salivary glands, to diastereoids. So this information is great because we now know every gene that is in every position of every chromosome. For example, if you look at the Ashburner tome that he wrote, you can look up some of these Halloween genes, Shadow, for example, and Phantom. And what it tells you is the site on the chromosome that they occur. And so you have all this information, and this makes it relatively easy to clone these genes. And we did all of this. So this slide is the 7 years of work. And here are the five genes that we were talking about. Spook, Phantom, Shadow, Shade, and Dib, disembodied. And this is where they are, and the chromosome they're on. And this is their site, or cytochrome P450 number. They are all cytochrome P450s. Okay. And here is a sample of the type of experiment we did. For example, we wanted to see what Shade does. And Shade incubated with labeled ecdysone. And in red, you see what happens using Shade in an S2 cell line and exposing it to tritiated ecdysone, that in a few moments, you get a big peak of 20-hydroxyecdysone. The control is a GFP, and there's nothing there. And you can see we do this by reverse phase, HPLC, mass spec, normal phase, TLC, and in some cases we have used NMR, like for Phantom, one of the genes, okay? This is all introduction. If you do in situs, these are the ring glands, the site of ecdysteroid biosynthesis. In the embryo and in the larval stages. I'm not going to go through each one, but you can see how specific it is for these Halloween genes. They just stand out. In addition, if you look at Manduca, you can show this correlation between the 20 monooxygenase activity. I forget, this is the fat body. During the last larval instar and pupal adult development, and you can see these peaks, and that these peaks are so wonderfully correlated with Shade expression in the fat body. So if you study both of these and you do the qPCR, you get this sort of correlation, which is rather unbelievable to me. It's believable because I know we got it. So here's the 7 years of work, basically. And the question is, how does this animal get cholesterol, which they get from phytosterols of one type or another by dealkylation, and get to 20-hydroxyecdysone? And so here are some of the genes that we start. Here's the ketodiol. This yellow tells you what happens when a particular enzyme works. And the first one is Phantom. It's the 25-hydroxylase, and it has its own CYP number, and it hydroxylates at the 25 position. The same for disembodied, the 22-hydroxylase, Shadow, the 2-hydroxylase, and Shade, the 20-hydroxylase. This is what I should have had drawn a black box, actually. I think I'll do that next time. This is a series of reactions that we don't know anything about. And we postulate that the rate-limiting step in ecdysteroid biosynthesis occurs in these reactions, and that these Halloween genes have something to do with it. First, there's Spook. We don't know exactly what it does yet, but I'll say a little more about it in a little while. And then there's Spookier. Spookier is a paralog of Spook. That is, it's another protein, but it does exactly the same thing as its mate. And in Drosophila, during embryogenesis on the molt to the first instar, Spook is there, but Spook then disappears. And for the other two instars and puperiation, it is spookier that comes to the fore. So I'm going to say a bit more about that, and I'll leave that, because this is our recent work, What is Spook? And so what I'd like to do is to turn to some extremely recent work which hasn't been published yet, and which is rather exciting to me. And in terms of molecular biology and biochemistry, I think this is a new concept. What we did was the following. We took the prothoracic glands of Manduca, and as many of you know, the left gland and the right gland make the same amount of ecdysteroid, so you can use one as an experimental and one as the control. So we use the recombinant Manduca PTTH, and so this is no PTTH with PTTH for a 15-minute incubation, then the same for an hour incubation, okay? And what we enter here is a field known as phosphoproteomics. And by a complex series of columns, including titanium dioxide columns, cation columns, we are able to go directly, well not directly, but through all these columns. It's a lot of work and it's basically automatic. And you wind up with material that you can put through the LC mass spec mass spec. And what this will measure for us is what proteins have been phosphorylated, how much they have been phosphorylated in comparison to the control, where there's no PTTH, and not only the amount of phosphorylation, but the amount of new protein that has been synthesized. And so we've done a lot of work on this. And I'm not going to belabor the point, but here are a number of spooks from, as you can see, one of them is a crustacean, Daphnia, which we showed last year has Halloween genes and makes ecdysteroids just like insects do, and a variety of insects. And we have identified two sequences that code for threonine or serine at these two positions. And phosphorylation occurs at one of these positions. We haven't been able to identify which one yet. This gives you some other material as far as what you see. The important thing, I left one slide out, basically. So this is called the fragmentation spectrum, okay, of the spoke peptide. And each of these is the ion reporter for the second mass spec. This is the 15-minute incubation control of no PTTH with the prothoracic gland. Here it is with 15-minute incubation. This is 1 hour incubation of the control and the experimental. And what you see is a fourfold increase in the phosphorylation of spook compared to the control. And I want to mention that none of the other Halloween genes are phosphorylated and enroll with PTTH. This is specific for spook. And has given and the fact that it goes down by an hour is reasonable in the sense that these are transient things. And if one really wanted to do it, you really should do it every minute or every 30 seconds after PTTH. But it gives us a handle. And what it has done is allowed us to try to explain some of the aspects of spook and therefore the black box in the biosynthesis of ecdysteroids. And so here is our new scheme, no PTTH with PTTH.
This gene is important and was found by the Kataoka Laboratories. It's called Neverland, and it is essential for the conversion of cholesterol to 70-hydrocholesterol. The exact mechanisms are unknown at this time. And then we get to the black box, and here it is. And our feeling is that in the black box, PTTH is increased in amount and in phosphorylation at one of those two sites I mentioned, the serine and threonine, and in this case allows the sequence to continue until you get to 20-hydroxydisone, going through all of these steps and using the various genes that I already mentioned to you. Do I still have a couple of minutes or something? All right, I'll mention one other thing which is not even in a slide, and it's really an interesting sort of piece of information. And that is, for many years, as Chelsea knows, we have worked on PTTH activation of the prothoracic glands of Manduca, looking at the transductory cascade, okay? That is, what are all the steps between the receptor and dihydroergenesis? And it's very complex. But what we found is that there was one key enzyme called ERK, E-R-K, it's an extracellular receptor kinase, which was affected dramatically by PTTH and upregulated, giving rise to the S6 kinase and so on and so forth. And what we decided to do is to see if this works in Drosophila. And it's another, I'm trying to give you some of the technology that's coming out in the use of Drosophila. So we used an RNAi to ERK, and this was with a specific promoter, tissue specific, and went only to the ring gland. And so the RNAi was delivered specifically to the ring gland, okay? And what we found is that when you treated the Drosophila larvae this way, they never molted to the pupa. In fact, the larvae were three times as large as the control larvae. That is, there was a block in this metamorphic molt. And it was just the same as some previous work we did where we were able to genetically ablate the neurons that make PTTH in Drosophila and look and see what the phenotype is. That is, they do not metamorphose. The timing is off. PTTH is a timing element as well as a stimulatory element, and works with all of the various insulin-like growth peptides in a very complex way. But what I'm showing you here is that in the use of Drosophila, you're able to get an enzyme and inhibit it or get rid of it in any specific tissue of the organism you want, having this whole list of tissue-specific promoters. So I hope I have introduced this symposium in terms of some of the new technologies that I think are going to be important over the next decade. There are many papers showing you upregulation, and we have many of them ourselves, of various genes at specific times. The difference here is we did the functional genomics of these genes, and we know what they do. We know what these proteins do. This is a big step. We're now into the entire field of proteomics, and I think that the field of insect hormones is entering that field with us. Thank you very much.